Hand of Darkness by Gav Thorpe. Performed by Gareth Armstrong, Cliff Chapman, Steve Conlin, Matthew Hunt, Emma Gregory, Jonathan Keeble, Toby Longworth, Penelope Rawlins, and Melvin Rawlinson. Part 3. The Thousand Sons of Ahriman and their demonic allies had been pushed back from the approach to the Black Library itself. Coordinated strikes from above and on the surface dissected the unnatural army, creating pockets of isolated enemies that were then swiftly destroyed by overwhelming force. As Ivrain prepared to join the fray, a wave serpent swept down to collect her. The rear door of the grav transport peeled down to form a ramp, and at the top waited the former autarch, Meliniel.
I wondered how long it would be before you joined us. Sooner than I expected. I hope that does not bode poorly for our greater goal.
I would have hoped the battle won by now.
In fairness, our own mission took only moments due to the vagaries of warp-skewed time.
Then I invite you to assist with the final strike. Our seers report that the sorcerer attempts to bind a fresh alliance with the demons. If we stop the ritual, he will have no option but to quit the webway, nor risk being trapped and destroyed.
As the wave serpent lifted away, Ivrain sat. She unfolded her hand, revealing the rose of Aisha in her palm. It fluttered as though in a breeze, though the air within the transport vehicle was as still as death. She felt its impulses like thoughts, conjuring a vision of a petal-strewn pathway in her mind.
Get me close to Ahriman. I have something even better.
The wave serpents slewed to a halt, their remote turrets opening fire on the squads of Rubric Marines that stood sentinel over the inner cabal of Ahriman. Under cover of the transport's fusillade, returned in volleys of the flickering inferno bolts by their Rubric-cursed foes, the Inari charged. The gulf opened by the ritual was almost ready to pierce the veil of the Realm of Chaos. Formless things awaiting manifestation, thrashed and boiled in its depths. Ivrain signaled to the Vizark, who came up beside his leader.
I will be distracted. Defend me.
As ever, Daughter of Shades.
While fresh violence broke out around her, Ivrain felt inside for the void where she had been raised by Aenead's touch. She plunged into the icy pool of her own mind, seeking the slender tendril of her god's lingering presence. Like a frozen wire, it wove into the hole opened by Ahriman's adepts, trembling and taut. The line did not pass into the warp, but into the cold void beyond, neither real nor unreal, nor the skein between. The realm of death. The absence. The empty expanse. And here she found the cold beat of Aenead's heart, restless, stirring. Here, the spirits of the slain were drawn, the souls of Eldar gathering like a mist of silver particles. Ivrain snatched up a handful of soul dust and rose like a diver breaching from the chilling depths.
Let forth your deadly wrath, guardian of the lust!
The silver dust sparkled as it hit the air, becoming an arc of flashing power. Racing from the frozen depths, the Incarnate burst free from the chains binding it to the nothingness of the hereafter. In its hand blazed white the Vilith Zar, incarnated as a long, two-headed barbed spear in the grip of Aenead's avatar.
Go forth, Inari! Let the lament of the foe be a hymn to our god!
Inspired by the mortal presence of their otherworldly master, the Inari crashed into the defenders of Ahriman like a rippling tide of white fire. At the forefront, the Incarnae, the Vizark, and Ivrain carved through the opposition, making headway towards the sorceress cabal, directing the efforts to breach both the Black Library and the Immaterium. At the approach of so deadly a group of foes, Ahriman's lackeys fled. They turned their conjuration into a whirling vortex that spirited away the adepts and their Rubric-cursed warriors, leaving their demonic allies to face the wrath of the Eldar alone. The howling black and purple maelstrom that had taken the sorcerers shrank quickly, but Ivrain sped on, ignoring the enemy in her need. It seemed that she was bent on hurling herself into the raging, lightning-wreathed storm to pursue her foes. But at the last moment, she stopped abruptly. From her fingers spun the Rose of Aisha, cutting the air like a shuriken. It flashed into the portal opened by the Cabal of Ahriman and disappeared. The portal of the Thousand Suns froze, becoming a momentary vignette of swirling power and light. It started to unravel, turning back on itself, slowly gathering momentum as the forces within shifted the axis of its energy. The vortex inverted, becoming a pillar, which opened up into a round arched gate that towered several stories high over the broken city. Its form was made up of entwined vines and thorny roses, winding about two trees, whose boughs knotted together to form the head of the arch. As with a gate inside the Black Library, beyond was obscured by a haze. Ivrain thought she saw a large, dim expanse, dominated by a huge structure beneath a cloud-filled sky of slate grey. She signaled Millennial.
Gather a small force. We must be ready to move at once.
What of the battle here?
You must finish what you have started. The Rose of Aisha will open a path into the realm of chaos itself. Unto the Garden of Decay, ruled over by the Plague Father. In that dismal place are linked all of his domains.
Including the plague planet of Mortarion.
Just so. We cannot achieve our aims through brute strength. And so we must use our greater weapon. Subtlety.
Millennial turned his gaze to the Incarnate. The incarnation of Inead was reaping a path through the demons of Tzeentch, forks of white lightning accompanying the strikes of its flashing spear. He raised an eyebrow.
Subtlety.
Well, the Incarnate will stay with you, of course.
Can you be sure that the Rose of Aisha will lead us to the Hand of Darkness?
No. We can be sure of nothing beyond this moment, this place. Such is the path we walk, into the unknown every time. This is what it means to be the servants of the dead. We walk upon the edge of the final barrier. What lies beyond is not for us to know.
That is not at all reassuring.
I was not aware it was meant to be. I have laid no claim to the loyalty of anyone here. It has been freely pledged. If you wish to turn back, you are welcome.
That was not my intent.
Then perhaps you should keep to your customary silence.
Marshalled by Millennial, the strike force that had pierced the camp of Ahriman was reassigned to the quest of Ivrain. They were Harlequins for the most part, the rest from Camorra. Millennial had a simple explanation when asked why he had omitted warriors from the craft worlds. He pointed to the spirit stone upon his chest.
You pass, however briefly, into the realm of chaos itself. I do not know what protection the Rose of Aisha will afford you, but I know that our spirit stones are like a beacon to the creatures of the Dark Prince.
On foot, they stole into the portal, the Vizark in the lead, Ivrain not far behind. They advanced beneath the boughs of trees laden with blossoms shaped like skulls, though underfoot was a thick layer of leaves as though freshly dropped. Gnarled faces leered at them from the thickly ridged bark of the trunks around them. Vines seemed to writhe and actively seek to trip them as they walked, eliciting the occasional curse from an unwary interloper. Ivrain had long become accustomed to the coldness in her breast that betrayed the ice-like touch of Inead on her soul. She was a vessel for the power of the god of the dead, an artifice almost, cloaked in the flesh and spirit of the living. Not like the Incarnate, raw power given momentary form, but a key with which the rise of Inead would be brought about. Thus, she was known as the Opener of the Seventh Way. Yet in the Garden of Nurgle, stepping into the realm of chaos proper, she felt an emptiness like nothing before. Here there was no death, though the nature of the place they entered was founded upon endings and the termination of hope. Chaos was eternal, And as much as it was self-devouring and self-defeating, it was also a font of endless power, constantly regurgitating itself. This cycle of life was writ real in the dismal gardens where decay and birth went hand in hand. Fungus and maggot, bacteria and scavenger all thrived on the detritus of the previously living. And it was this circular force that robbed Ennead of his power.
If we die here...
Yes. A victory of the Plague Father over the great enemy. To sneak away the souls of her benighted children for all time. What pretty crimson flowers your spirit would make, I'm sure.
What Ibrahim had thought of as clouds were in fact vast banks of smoke issuing from infernal chimneys upon the mountainous manse that cast its cold shadow over the lands. Despite the absence of sunlight, all being swathed in a purple-grey post-dusk gloom, the garden was as florid with its fecundity as it was teeming with lower creatures that thrived on the demise of others. The wind changed, bringing fresh draughts of noxious decaying stench. Looking up at the smoke clouds, Ivrain saw that their movement was erratic, not at all linked to the swaying of the autumnal trees whose shadows they slunk through.
We cannot remain at our leisure. Our presence here is being noted.
How so?
The sky. It is not clouds that swathe the pale sun. They are swarms. And see how they turn.
They are coming for us.
Run! Do not let these baleflies catch us!
At her command, the small strike force sped on, no longer giving thought to stealth. Above them, the thick blackness descended, growing darker and darker with each passing moment.
How far? Whither do we run?
Ivrain was not sure. She cast about for some sign to guide her, the heavily armored, slowest members of the expedition lagging behind. The leading edge of the undulating swarm engulfed the last runner. One moment he was visible, the next he had disappeared into what seemed to be solid blackness. Ibrahim's last sight of him was ascending into the heavens, impossibly borne up by the millions of insects. The swarm pressed on, engulfing another unfortunate, dragging her away to the unkind attention of the Plague Father's minions. Ahead, Ibrahim spied a flash of red, startling and intense. It drew her eyes to an old shack made of mildew-slicked boards leaning haphazardly against the bole of a massive tree, itself punctured by wormholes and knots large enough for a mortal to climb within.
With me! Faster!
They sped over the tangled grass and weeds, unable to stop for those too slow. Ibrahim reached the door and wrenched it open. She almost fell, unbalanced upon a broad stone stairwell that led down into the darkness. With the others pressing towards the door, she had no option and flung herself down the step into the unknown dark. The steps took them into a dank dungeon, the crumbling stone walls lit by patches of glowing moss and fungi. Underfoot, the flags were slick, the air tainted with a stench of effluent. They advanced along narrow corridors past great doors of mildewed wood bound with rusted iron. Barred windows were set into the great portals beyond the reach of the Eldar. Had she been able to look through, Ivrain would have declined. The smells and sound emanating from beyond the doors spoke of filth, and beasts she had no desire to lay eyes upon, if their assault on her nose and ears was any indication.
What if these beasts protect the Hand of Darkness?
In reply, Ivrain brandished Tavir, its bright light suddenly harsh and blinding in the gloom of the subterranean corridor. The passage eventually brought them into a broader space, the ceiling even more gigantic above.
A fortress built for giants.
Even the traitor Primarch is not so monstrously proportioned to make use of such a space.
The answer to this was swiftly revealed as they came upon a massive figure reclining in a throne-like chair at the end of the vast hall. It was lit by a great brazier that burned green flames, the fume from the skull-shaped coals stinging the eyes and coating the throat with its acrid touch. The creature on the throne breathed in draughts of the poisonous smoke through slit nostrils, expelling them slowly from its open, needle-fanged mouth. The seated figure was 4, perhaps 5 times the height of Ibrahim, almost skeletal in its thinness. Its skin was grey and leathery, marked by boil and wart, at least what could be seen on hands and face, for the rest was clad in serrated plates of battle armour edged with gold. That face was a nightmare. The slit nose, the mouth set beneath a cluster of eyes like those of a fly, though for the time being closed with dozens of feathery membranes. Beside its legs, propped against the arm of the throne, was a curved scimitar, as tall as Ibrahim. The blade caught the light of Kavir in a strange fashion, breaking it into the colours of a bruise, as if the sword was made of contused flesh.
It sleeps.
A poor guardian. See, on the stand before it. The Hand of Darkness.
What Ibrahim had described as a stand was far more. It was a construction of mouldering bones held by twists of rusted wire and tarnished copper bands. Of a figure twice Ibrahim's height down on one knee, head bowed in supplication. It had one hand held to its chest, cradling a smaller figure, the bones of a child similarly arranged. The other was held up with a palm outward as though to ward away a blow. Yet this hand was not bone, but a thing of dark flesh and sinew, globules of thick ichor flowing from its severed wrist onto the bone mannequin that held it.
You claim the prize, and I shall dispatch the foul sentry.
Ibrahim nodded her assent, and they signaled for the others to wait while they crossed the final massive stones of the hall. The Vizark was a dozen paces from the huge guard when Ibrahim reached the Hand of Darkness. She sheathed her blade, and in the light from begrimed windows high above, reached up to pluck her prize from its resting place. It flexed and bucked within her grip, and she stepped back, pulling hard to wrench the cursed thing from the skeleton upon which it had been bound. The skeleton pulled back its head, mouth gaping wide. Alerted, the guard upon the throne roused immediately, its dozens of eyes flashing open with a pale moon glimmer. They fixed upon the Vizark as it reached a seven-fingered hand down to the hilt of its immense blade. The Vizark threw himself at the creature, the Sword of Silent Screams held in both hands. He struck at the leg as the massive creature rose from its chair, the mighty blow severing the bones between knee and ankle. The writhing Hand of Darkness in her grip, Ibrahim drew her own blade again and leapt to her companion's aid as splinter rifle fire and shuriken sang past, striking the face and chest of the monster. She ducked beneath a swing of the scimitar, holding her breath as poisonous fumes swirled around its cutting edge. Unbalanced, it toppled as its wounded bones broke under another strike from the Vizark, severing the limb completely. Ibrahim rolled aside just in time to avoid the fall of the monstrous guardian, its outstretched sword hand crashing onto the flags beside her. As quick as lightning, she struck, thrice lashing her blade against the exposed wrist, the final blow parting ligament and thick flesh. A tumult echoed from a great doorway beyond the throne, and flickering lights shone on the walls past the portal. Immense shadows moved across the opening.
Leave it! It is not vengeance to be taken by these brutes!
The Vizark looked for a moment as though he would disobey, drawing back the Sword of Silent Screams for another attack.
We have the hand. It is time to go.
Her words cut through the fog of Cain that had gripped the Vizark. He shook his head, retreated a step, and then turned, signaling his acquiescence with a blade pointed toward the route by which they had come. Needing no further urging, the Inari withdrew with their prize.